I'm Leslie Wise. This is Ethics and Jurisprudence for Chiropractors. The course number is 011. It's a 48-hour course. Ethics and Jurisprudence probably deserves a definition right up front. We usually define ethics as the branch of philosophy dealing with right behavior. You may recall that Plato wrote a book called Ethics, in which a group of people sat around a table and discussed right behavior, the correct actions to be taken by human beings. Generally, we have, by the time we are adults, we have absorbed a code of ethics to some degree or another. Many of us pick this up through our religious affiliations. Religions have built-in codes of ethics. It is not absolutely necessary to be religious in order to be ethical. There are ethical codes that fall outside religious bounds. And many of us have picked up certain ethical ideas over the years. This is the type of thing that your grandma teaches you, and you learn maybe in Sunday school, and you learn from your interactions with your peers as you grow up. And these are the things that your parents instruct you on as you're growing up, and they say, you know, in our society, we just don't do that. Or in our society, here's what we do. So an ethical code comes to us through our entire process of growing up. And you can imagine that if some people grow up without adult supervision or grow up without any formalized ethical training through Sunday school or through public schools, that they may have a little problem dealing with certain ethical issues. Some of the various concepts that we internalize as we grow up have to do with ethical and right behavior. One of those concepts is the concept of caring about the well-being of others. We're sort of taught from very early that we should care about other people and try to do things that would help the well-being of other people. Helping out the unfortunate, charity comes from this concept, that we help people who are less fortunate than us. We try to make their lives better. That's just sort of part of an ethical code that we have. Another one would be respecting the rights of others, allowing other people to self-direct, if you will. We may not agree with a person's actions, but we have an internalized little monitor that says, well, even though I don't agree, I'm going to let them do that because it's their right to determine. The right of self-determination comes in here. And we, in our ethical code, sort of develop the concept that we will allow other people to do what they think is right, even if we don't think that it's right. Being trustworthy and honest is an ethical concept that crosses religious boundaries and cultural boundaries, that we can be trustworthy. That someone entrusts us with information or with property, they will take care of it for them. We are worthy of their trust. That goes across all cultural bounds, and that's something that's sort of built in, a built-in ethical code in most places. Another one is that we tend to really have built into us the concept of going along with the laws of our society, that we comply with the rules and the regulations that have been set up by our own individual society. We have to trust that society's rules are for the best interest of all of us, or maybe the best interests of society in general. And so we have sort of built into us the need or the desire or the want to comply with the laws of our particular society. We know that when we see a red light that says STOP, it's a good idea to stop. Our society depends on people stopping at stop signs. We have a bit of an obligation to stop at stop signs. And people have the right to expect that we will stop at stop signs. And society works better because people do obey that stop sign. Another one, another ethical concept that we learn very often is being fair in our dealings with others. Not cheating people and not taking advantage of people is sort of built in. In most societies, we try not to take advantage of someone in a business transaction. We try not to take advantage of someone in a trade. We are sort of programmed, if you will, to be honest in our dealings with others, to not lie to people gratuitously, but to tell them the truth. And people sort of expect that we will tell them the truth. Another one that comes up all the time is that the concept of doing good and preventing harm. We are sort of programmed to believe that we should try to do good, try to help people, try to make life better for people in particular and for our society in general, and that we should try to prevent harm if at all possible, not to injure others, not to take advantage of them in a property sense, steal their property or connive them out of their property. And so these particular little concepts we have sort of get built into us by our society, by our parents, by our schooling, by our dealings with others, and the idea of do unto others as you would have them do unto you is cross-cultural, really. It's built in many, many cultures, many, many religions all have that concept in mind. So we as human beings establish an ethical code based on these early teachings that we have, and we sort of develop a code of behavior for ourselves that we end up teaching to our children and grandchildren, and we say to them, well, we don't do that kind of behavior in this society. That's not the way we operate. And we try to teach them these ethical concepts. There's a big resurgence these days in education of teaching moral behavior, of teaching right and wrong. A lot of people say that our society has sort of broken down and that we don't do that very often anymore, or at least not as often as we should. And so we hear people in the education world saying we need to teach a course in moral values. And a lot of other people get real suspicious and real anxious because they're afraid they're going to teach only their moral values and that they may be different from the moral values that I want to teach. So this is something that we sort of build into our parenting, to our grandparenting, to our extended family group, and we learn these concepts really quite early. We don't generally pick them up as adults. It's kind of too late. So these are all ethical concepts of what? Of just being a human being. That we owe these behaviors to other people just because they're human beings. Not because they're members of our clan or members of our religion or members of our race, but because they're human. So we all have these built into us. One of the things that we talk about as we move into the talking about professions is we talk about a professional code of ethics. And as professionals, as people who operate in the professional realm, not only do we adhere to the standard ethical codes that I have mentioned, looking out for the well-being of others, not causing harm, etc. Not only do we adhere to those, but we create an additional layer of ethical behaviors that apply primarily to the professions and to the professionals, doctors, lawyers, and other professions. So we have a few additional layers that we are obligated to stick to. Some of these elements are of a little higher ethical nature. One of them would be disclosing any hidden interests. We as professionals, when we take on a relationship with another person as a professional in our professional capacity, we owe an obligation not to have any hidden interests in mind. Example of this, a doctor who prescribes a medicine or a remedy of some sort that the patient then goes and buys and the doctor makes a profit on. For example, if the doctor owns stock in a particular drug company and then only prescribes drugs made by that company. Or the doctor owns a pharmacy, and so he writes prescriptions for remedies that are only sold in that pharmacy. He makes a profit. Or the doctor has his own pharmacy right in his office, and he says, I'm writing you a prescription for a particular remedy, now step out to the front and get that filled. We call this a conflict of interests, or we have hidden interests in a case like that. Or a chiropractor, maybe, who prescribes exercises at a particular gym. And he says, there's an exercise person there who can really help you, so I'm going to send you over there with a prescription for exercises. And not disclosing that maybe I, as the chiropractor, own the gym. That would be a failure to disclose any hidden interests. So as a professional, we owe to our patients disclosure of any hidden interests. That's an extra layer of ethical behavior that we must adhere to. Maintaining objectivity and impartiality is an ethical responsibility of the professional. Maintaining objectivity means that we will not let our emotions or our own personal inclinations lead us to make a decision. This is one of the reasons behind, this particular one is a reason behind the idea that doctors preferably do not provide care or treatment for someone who's very close to them. A relative, a spouse, a parent, a child. You may be so close to them emotionally that your impartiality is sort of clouded. Your objectivity is sort of clouded, and you may not be looking at the whole picture because of your emotional contacts and your emotional closeness to the person. So you may lose objectivity. So we as professionals owe it to our clients, to our patients, we owe absolute objectivity, that we don't let our own feelings get in the way of what is best for the patient. So this is an added layer of ethical behavior that we as professionals must deal with. Another one is upholding strict confidentiality. As professionals, we owe to our clients, to our patients, absolute confidentiality. A patient must be able to tell us any bit of information necessary for us to provide the proper care for them. And they must be able to do that without any feeling that we might use that information to gain advantage over them in some way, to embarrass them in some way, or to make fun of them in any way. We owe absolute confidentiality. Patients should be able to tell you anything necessary to help you provide better care, knowing that you are not in any way going to divulge that information in an inappropriate manner. You're not going to use that information against them. You're not going to do anything to embarrass them in any way. We'll discuss this more later when we get to confidentiality in the ethics section. Being duly diligent. A couple of interesting words there. Due diligence is one of the concepts of professionalism that comes up, particularly in a doctor-patient relationship, that we must be duly diligent. We have to be guarding and provide for the patient's care in a very responsible manner. We cannot be casual. We cannot be anything except absolutely serious and diligent when it comes to protecting a patient's best interests. That's our obligation. And so due diligence or lack of due diligence comes up when we start talking about malpractice issues. Lack of due diligence comes into play there. So we owe to our patients absolute responsibility and absolute seriousness in looking out for their best interests, not our own or anybody else's, but patients' best interests. So due diligence is extremely important. Exercising professional responsibilities faithfully. We have a relationship with a patient. We owe them a faithful responsibility that we'll take care of them in a way that shows responsibility and shows obligation to them. We're not looking out for anyone else's best interest. We're looking out for the best interest of our patient. We owe them that. And that's one of our professional ethical obligations. Another one is avoiding conflicts of interest. There are times when the interest of a patient may conflict with your own interests. And as a professional person, we're obligated to tell the patient that there is a conflict here and to discuss it, not to keep it hidden. Sometimes this comes up with dealing with fees, that we may have some conflict of interest about fees. If perhaps we're providing care that may not be necessary in just in order to collect a fee, we have a conflict of interest. Our interest collecting fees, patient's interest getting well or maintaining wellness, and we run into a conflict here. So it's important that we not have conflicts of interest. Another conflict of interest would be selling a patient something. We are dealers in a multi-level vitamin operation, and we tell the patient that they need this particular vitamin and we sell it to them. We have a conflict of interest here. The patient's best interest is put aside for our own best interest, and that's a conflict. As professionals, we must not engage in activities that bring up a conflict of interest. The proper thing to do there is to step back. Judges, when they run into a conflict of interest, use the term they recuse themselves. They pull themselves out of the case and say, I cannot make a decision in this case without a conflict of interest, therefore I'm pulling out. As a chiropractor, we owe our patients the same obligation. If we run into a situation that a conflict of interest arises, the best thing we can do is to dismiss the patient, or at least alert the patient to the conflict of interest, explain the conflict, let the patient make their own decision about the future of our relationship. If a patient chooses to step out of the relationship, we absolutely would go along with that. If a patient says, I understand the conflict of interest, but I trust your judgment to do the right thing, and I'm going to go ahead with this relationship, then we have done our duty in telling them of our conflict of interest. So those are a few, and not all of the ethical obligations that we have as professionals, in addition to the ethical obligations we have as just human beings.